The Courage to Lead, Episode 12.
You're listening to the IB4E Coaching Podcast.
Brought to you by IB4E Coaching, business coaching for executives, entrepreneurs, and small business professionals. Learn more at ib4e-coaching.com. All right, Coach Harlan here. Welcome back to the podcast. I hope you guys are enjoying these sessions as much as I am. I'm just having a blast. I am with a good friend, Katie Wagner. Katie Wagner spent 15 years as a television and radio journalist, working for news outlets all over the world, including ABC, CBS, Fox, CNN, and National Public Radio. As a professional storyteller, Katie knows how to engage an audience and build credibility, and she believes those skills are just as valuable for business owners as they are for journalists. Today, Katie owns a full-service digital marketing agency made up of journalists like herself. The agency, KWSM, specializes in content creation, social media management, digital advertising, and website design. They work with clients like Mitsubishi, Anthem Blue Cross, F45 Fitness Studio, Rakuten, Caesars Entertainment, and smaller mid-sized companies across the country. KWSM has offices in Orange County, California, San Diego, California, Atlanta, Georgia, and Las Vegas, Nevada. Katie also works as a consultant, helping business integrate digital marketing into their traditional marketing plans. She's a popular speaker, regularly gives keynote presentations, and leads workshops and breakout sessions for both corporate and small business audiences. Katie lives in San Diego, California, with her husband and their 5 rescue dogs. Katie, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
This is awesome. Before I have to go directly to the most important part, tell me about your 5 rescue dogs.
Yes, they are all senior dogs. So we only rescue seniors, which means they're 7 or older when we get them. And currently our oldest is 14 and our youngest is 12. So there's a lot of sleeping going on. 5 dogs is a lot less work when they're sleeping.
Yes.
they're all kinds. 3 of them are pit bull mixes. One's a Boston Terrier and one's a Chihuahua.
Wow. And they all get along?
They do. Yeah. They get along great.
That is excellent. Just number one, I'm a dog fan. Cats are okay in their own right. But I love dogs, and just the fact of rescuing dogs, that tells me so much, I think, about you. You know, when you rescue an animal that can't really do anything for your business, can't help promote you or refer you to people and stuff like that, to take care of that animal and now think, how are you going to take care of your actual customers, paying customers? That says, I think, a lot for your business. So that, I commend you on that. That is awesome. I think it would break my heart. I would not be able to let go of dogs like fostering. I know people who foster dogs. I couldn't do that. I want to adopt them all and keep them.
Well, that's how you get to 5. I want that too.
Exactly. All right. Well, we'll get into this. I want to definitely talk about your background in journalism, how you made the transition to digital media. But before we get started, Katie, I have a couple questions I would like to ask you. These are questions that were made popular on the television show Inside the Actor's Studio when the host James Lipton asked these same 10 questions of his guests, and I would like to pose the questions to you. So, Katie, question number 1, and your dogs can help out. That's good.
I was going to say you're going to hear them, but I'll try to.
That's fine. That's fine. All right, question number 1. What is your favorite word?
My favorite word is resilience.
What is your least favorite word?
Oftentimes. I don't think that should be a word. It's just often.
Exactly. All right. What turns you on?
Growth, competition, success, all those things an entrepreneur has to have.
Nice. What turns you off?
Complaining about things you can't change.
What sound or noise do you love?
Well, except when I'm on a podcast, I like to hear my dogs in the background. Make me feel less alone while working from home. But today it might be in the worst category.
That's fine. What sound or noise do you hate?
Screeching tires, like cars slamming on their brakes.
Yes, because you never know what's going to follow.
Right?
Exactly. What is your favorite curse word?
Ooh, rhymes with duck.
Okay. Good job. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I would love to be a lawyer.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's okay. What I thought I would do.
Me too, as a matter of fact. That's funny. What profession would you not like to do?
Any kind of food service, waitressing, that sort of thing. I think I would be very bad at that.
Awesome. And finally, Katie, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Good job.
Good job. All right. Love it. All right. Well, Katie, we will be right back after this brief timeout. So stick with us.
For a limited time only, you can get your hands on my proprietary Roscoe framework, the best damn goal achievement methodology ever devised. Crush every goal, personal or professional, guaranteed. Check it out, ib4e-coaching.com/Roscoe. That's RSSCO, the Roscoe framework, ib4e-coaching.com/Roscoe. Get it now.
All right. So we're back with Katie Wagner. Katie, tell me about your journalism. Is that something you had always wanted to do, or how did you go into journalism?
It is. Yeah, it's what I went to school for, what I thought I would always do. Couldn't wait to get started, and I had a lot of fun. I was in journalism for about 15 years, started in local radio and worked my way up to local TV and then national TV, and I loved it. You know, I got to do and see things I never would have any other way, and tell a lot of stories and meet a lot of interesting people, and I'm just grateful for my time in journalism. It was amazing.
That's awesome. So you're one of those kids who stood in front of the mirror with the hairbrush telling, yeah.
Yes, I still do that. Is that wrong?
No. That's fine. I do the weather myself. Yes. So what was your best assignment?
Well, depends on what we're quantifying as best, but I'll tell you about the one that changed my life, and that is on 9/11. I was a reporter in Portland, Maine, so working at a local ABC station there. And I don't know if you know this, but when the hijackers, when they got on the plane to go into the Twin Towers, they left out of Portland, Maine. That's where they got on the flight originally and then changed planes into the plane that would originally or eventually crash. And so one of the terrorists had been living in Portland, Maine for a year or so, had a girlfriend, had a job, had friends and family there who had no idea who this person really was.
Wow.
And on the morning of 9/11, it became my job to track down his family and his friends and his life there and figure out what was going on. And it was powerful because, you know, I'm talking to a woman who was my age at the time, you know, 20s. Had no idea who this person she loved really was. And it really impacted me a lot just because you can't imagine finding yourself in that situation. Wow. But also that's how I ended up on the national news because they saw that story that I did and asked me to come aboard the next day. So it changed my life in a lot of ways.
I bet. Wow. So you had to research to find this person, or do you have researchers that help you with that?
We knew who she was. I just had to track her down and, you know, and even find the hotel room where he stayed when he first came to town and anyone who'd had contact with him, that sort of thing. Yeah.
So that propelled you into the national spotlight. Where did you go to work then?
I went to go to ABC at the network level and then worked my way around. You know, I've worked at a lot of different stations and ended up at CNN, which I loved.
Here in Atlanta?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. That's awesome. And what was your specialty? Did you have something that you did? You know,
early part of my career, I was an investigative reporter, but then I graduated to anchoring. So just anchoring at the end.
Got your own little time slot and everything?
I did. When it was 3 a.m. to 8 a.m. I was not their star, Harlan. But
all the things that were happening in Europe overnight, right?
That's right.
Very nice.
Right. The international desk and I were friends.
That is awesome. And then you made the transition to digital media.
I did.
How did that start?
Well, in the last few years of my television career, we realized that, you know, social media was getting big and there was kind of a shift. Nobody was watching the 5 o'clock news the way they used to because they could get headlines on Facebook and Twitter and see videos and YouTube. And the powers that be at my station said, get out there and learn how to use these channels and get our audience back. And so it became my job in the last few years of my career to not only tell stories on radio and TV, but to tell them on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. And I saw an opportunity there because I knew these channels were gaining steam with consumers, with the audiences, and business owners didn't really know how to use them or how to tell stories. And so I retired from TV in order to start a consulting practice, really, to help business owners learn to tell their story using the new digital communication tools. And I like to say I accidentally grew an agency from there.
That is awesome. And so you started here in Atlanta?
I married my husband in 2009, and my husband lived in Orange County, California.
Okay.
But I loved my job at CNN, and I refused to leave Atlanta. Okay. So we lived apart for the first year.
Wow.
Which is fine, but eventually you have to live with the guy.
Eventually.
So when I retired, I moved to Orange County and I started the agency there.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. Very nice. And now you have, like I said, offices in Orange County, San Diego, Atlanta, Las Vegas. Where else are you opening offices?
Our next office will be in Boston.
It was
supposed to happen in 2020, but the pandemic took care of that. So hopefully latter part of this year.
Do businesses warm up to the video idea, or is that something difficult for them?
I think they do when they see the value of it. You know, video is scary for anyone and everyone, right? None of us like to be on camera. None of us like the way our voice sounds or our face looks. I mean, that's true even when you do it for a living.
Sure.
But it provides such a great way for audiences to really connect with you emotionally when they can see your face and hear your voice and your body language. You know, body language is how we decide if we like somebody or trust them.
Absolutely.
So if we can show our clients or our businesses how to use those tools effectively, I think the pros outweigh the cons, and most people put the fear aside.
Yeah. Can you tell us one example of a company that you've helped to use media to really boost their sales or boost their company?
Sure. We work with a vitamin manufacturer in San Diego. And, you know, it's a commodity. It's a product that we're selling to consumers. But when we started getting more traction was when we started using video to show a lot of their manufacturing processes and be more transparent about the way the vitamins were made, the ingredients, and the quality control that goes into them, because they're world-class in their standards and their quality checks. And really helping to tell those behind the scenes stories created more demand for the brand itself. Because as a consumer, when you look on the vitamin aisle, you know, okay, this all has vitamin B in it. That's good. Right. That's what I'm looking for. It's hard to really tell the difference, but understanding the quality and the purity and the real heart that went into the making of those really helped us boost sales.
Nice. Was there resistance there? Did they not want to share that process? Because I know some companies are real, tentative about sharing things that are too deep in the company?
In this case, I think they just hadn't thought of it that way before. They seemed pretty excited about it once we mapped out a plan and put a strategy behind it. And it also allowed us to showcase their particular company that has had employees that have been with them 20, 30 years. Mm. And it allowed us to showcase those long-term employees and the role they play in the process, which was kind of fun for them from a storytelling standpoint.
Awesome. Now, do you come in with a full team to do the video and everything?
We do. Yeah. We have in-house videographers at all of our offices and field producers. And most of my staff is former journalists. We all come from journalism backgrounds. So they're all professional storytellers and they know how to ask the right questions.
So. And storytelling is so huge. And I don't think people understand that it's the stories that really open people up to where they can say, hey, that sounds like me, or I know exactly what that feels like. What are some of the stories you've heard in your business?
Well, it makes people more relatable, right? Okay. So I'm going to twist your question a little bit to tell you, we have sort of rules of storytelling in my business.
Okay.
And so good stories always contain people. So some of the best stories that my clients tell are about the people in their business, you know, whether that's their customers, their employees, the vendors or the team that comes together to make a product or a service possible. Those are the humans are the things that consumers really connect with, not the product itself.
Okay.
So that's important. I think good stories go behind the scenes, you know, like the vitamin story, they have that element of transparency or letting you behind the curtain. And I think especially, it's funny, especially as we've gone through this pandemic together, transparency and authenticity has become a lot more important to people with the brands that they choose to support.
Sure.
So being able to tell the stories that let you behind that curtain a little bit is really important right now.
Yeah. I was talking in one of the networking sessions that we had earlier today, how difficult it is. You know, my background is in organizational change management. So we work with a company to help them through a major change. Being in a room where you're talking to the executive team, you can kind of feel the tension. You can see the body language. You can see them drawing pictures instead of taking notes or something like that. You lose a lot of that over Zoom calls. Yes. Either people don't have their camera on or you're just looking at the face. You're not really seeing the tension in their shoulders. You're not feeling the tension in the room. How do you get past that when you're trying to do videos for companies?
Well, I think body language is really important. It's funny, I teach a How to Look Good on Zoom course. And one of the things I tell people is you have to scoot back a little bit so that more of your body shows, because that body language is how we relate to each other. So when we're coaching clients to be on video, we would never shoot just head and shoulders. We'd probably try to go waist up. And one of the big tips I have is people stand square to the camera. And when you stand with your weight on equal footing, it makes you look tense. You know, your shoulders tense up automatically. You're uncomfortable. So just dropping a foot behind you and putting more weight on your back foot and having it be uneven makes you look a lot more natural. And then also bending your elbows. So when you stand with your, you know, arms by your side, It doesn't feel comfortable and it doesn't look comfortable. So if you want to relate, we teach people to bend their elbows and touch their hands in front of their body. And it just softens this whole upper area. So even if I can't see your hands in the shot, you're a lot more natural looking and it's a lot more comfortable too. You feel better.
That's awesome. So full service, you work with the people that are going to be on camera. You do the video and the editing. Do you write the material or do you work with the client to write the material?
We work with them. So yes, we'll write scripts. Sometimes they prefer to be interviewed instead of having a strict script and a teleprompter. It depends on how people will perform the best. And that varies from person to person. But yes, there's always a plan and a script and a storyboard for what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. And now these videos, do they go on the websites or do you use those for social media or a combination?
All of the above. Go on website landing pages. They go on social media, both living on YouTube and then being shared places like Facebook and LinkedIn. They go in email communications, email newsletters, that sort of thing. And often we turn them into ads. You can run video ads that then link back to a landing page or something like that. So It's worth the investment because there's a million different things you can do with video once you have it.
And like you said, video is so powerful, especially nowadays. People are walking around with their cell phone, their smartphone in front of them. Yes. I know a guy that he does construction. He has construction teams working all around the city, and he will visit each one of the construction sites and do a quick video of him standing at the construction site saying, "These are my guys. They're phenomenal. We do a great job for you. Give me a call." And he said that just posting those little 1-minute clips, and he's doing 4 or 5 a day, his business has exploded.
I believe it because he's telling the story and everybody wants to work with somebody they like. And what's more likable than saying as a business owner, my team is really great and I'm proud of them and I think they're doing good work.
Exactly.
That's very engaging.
It is. So what are some of the clients you're working for? You said you're working for.
We work a lot for in the health and wellness industry. So fitness, vitamins. We work a lot in beauty and cosmetics. And then on the B2B side, we work a lot with professional services, lawyers, CPAs, financial advisors.
Nice.
We don't specialize in an industry because my industry changes too fast.
Sure.
And what worked in digital last week isn't going to work next week. And so by being in a bunch of different types of businesses, we actually are more innovative and creative and we can adapt faster to those changes.
That's awesome. And do they find you because of some of the work you've done?
They find us because we do our own digital marketing. Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah. So about 50% of my business comes from my own website and marketing efforts, because if I can't do it for myself, you should not hire me to do it for you.
There you go.
And then the rest is referrals from partners and current clients.
Awesome. And you do a lot of training too, right? You have training classes on digital media and social media.
Yeah. One of our core values is around education. And the thing that bothers me about this industry is that business owners don't know a lot about it. It's a new language. It's a new thing they have to learn. And I think a lot of people in my field take advantage of that. And so we decided early on as an agency that even people who couldn't hire us, we would educate them to be better consumers of the industry. And so we do. We have digital marketing and social media boot camps that we put on about 3 times a year each, where people can learn all the same tools that I'm using or my staff is using to run our client accounts. We'll teach them how to do it for themselves because, you know, everybody should have access to good digital marketing and using these tools, whether they can afford to hire an agency or not.
And at least understand, you know, how they're used, what they're used for, you know, so you can talk the same language and everything. Have you had any clients that have tried to do this on their own?
Many of our clients have attempted to do it on their own first, which is great. But typically, you know, it takes investment, right? Time, resources. It's hard. And it's hard to be as agile as you have to adjust to digital and the changing environment there. And so when a company gets large enough that they can outsource, typically they will outsource at least a portion of it or hire a full-time in-house expert to do it.
Yeah. I was talking to, I think it was Simon this morning, and we were talking about how if your house was on fire, you wouldn't go on to YouTube and look up videos on how to be a firefighter. You would call a professional, right? There are times where you want to learn how to do things, but there are times where you just need to call a professional. To me, this is one of those areas. I know nothing of marketing. I am one of those solopreneurs who tries to do everything.
Nice.
And some of it is okay. Some of it I definitely need some help with. But I'm getting better with videos. I'm getting better with hopefully the podcast. But there are definitely some areas. What type of classes are you running? Do you have any coming up that you'd like to promote?
We do. Yeah. In March, we have Digital Marketing Bootcamp, which is every Friday in March. And there are 4 classes that cover lead generation strategy, websites and SEO, social media marketing and advertising, and then lead nurturing.
Nurturing. So okay. And what does the nurturing involve? Is that like just having a campaign where you're reaching out, touching them every so often? And
yeah, it's typically through email, automation, or text messaging, something that's going to follow up with someone after they've engaged with you in some way. Maybe they filled out a contact form or downloaded something off your website or watched a video. And then it's a matter of staying top of mind with them and continuing to educate them about your services until they're ready to take the next step.
Nice. So you're looking to advance or to expand into Boston. Are there some companies that you really, really want to work with that you're going after?
Not by name, but we like companies that are in sort of aggressive growth mode because most people hire us to generate leads or sales. Mm-hmm. Nobody does digital just because it might be fun. They do it because they want to see, growth or some kind of ROI.
Right.
And so we really like results. Everybody says that, but it's no fun doing the things we're doing if it doesn't work. And it can be really frustrating for the business owner and for us as well. So I like companies that want to grow fast, that have a product or a service, that they understand the positioning, they know who their target audience is, and they really just need help getting in front of them in a new way and building that relationship over time.
Nice. What about municipalities? Have you done any work for cities?
Yeah, we work a lot in municipalities, cities, counties, and local government, a lot of chambers of commerce, elected officials, all of that. Sometimes counties hire us to help with their tourism campaigns.
Nice. You know,
We had one for the county of San Bernardino in California that was, we were promoting California's outdoor playground.
Nice.
It's a tourism campaign, but we can reach a lot of people through digital tools. And then sometimes it's as simple as we have cities that we work with that just want to raise the level of civic literacy among their residents and get their messaging out to more people and really communicate with residents on platforms they're using anyway. And so we design communication plans for them there.
Nice. In working with our local Chamber of Commerce here in Noonan, Coweta County, we took a trip up to Greenville to see how Greenville uses their natural resources to draw people in and make it a destination. They want to make Noonan a destination.
Very cool.
I would love to connect you with them. How would you go about helping them? Like, what type of things could you do to help them get the word out that here we are, here's what we have available?
Yeah, well, I forgot you were in Atlanta. I should have used an Atlanta example. So Arabia Mountain National Heritage Preserve is our client in Atlanta. They're a competitor of Stone Mountain. Maybe you've heard of that.
Yeah.
And we do a lot of things to help them drive visitors. You know, they're not trying to sell anything online. They're trying to get people to get in their car on the weekend and come there.
Sure.
So sort of like Noonan wants. And we do a lot of things. We write blogs about, you know, ways to explore the park, activities that are there. We do a lot of social posting on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We create videos that we then show, you know, different activities at the park or different things that the park has to offer. But a lot of the times it's things like website and SEO work. So they just have a new website, but we've really worked to dial it in for conversions and make sure people can find the information they need quickly, the address, you know, the events coming up, that sort of thing. And then also SEO to make sure when people are looking for things to do this weekend in Atlanta, Arabia Mountain comes up as one of those choices.
Yeah.
Right. So it's what we really do is these holistic plans that touch a lot of these different areas, because any one of the channels doesn't work particularly well in a vacuum. It really takes this synergistic multiple tactics
Absolutely.
To get the kind of results you need.
That is awesome. So let's kind of turn the conversation to courage. Okay. Cause a lot of the stuff you're talking about, you know, starting your own business, branching out on your own, is courageous, you know, think about it. So the podcast is A Courage to Lead. And, it's kind of exploring what it takes to be a courageous leader. There's intellectual courage, moral courage, discipline courage. You had, a good job as a journalist working at CNN here in Atlanta. And then you saw a potential and you decided to make that leap. What was that like? What was that like?
Well, I was very naive about it, to be honest. It never occurred to me that it wouldn't work. So, you know, you can call that ego or headstrongness. I've been accused of both. But really I just won't take no for an answer, right? My life motto is failure's not an option. And so I really wasn't as scared as perhaps I should have been at the time. I'll tell you, Harlan, the scariest day of my life is when my husband, the year after me starting the agency, quit his six-figure job to come work for me. And I realized, so we both work for the agency full-time for over 10 years now.
Wow.
And I realized, oh, this really is all on my shoulders. You know, before, yes, I was taking a risk, but he had a job, so we were going to eat, you know, pay our mortgage.
Right.
When he left, he was in operations management for Starbucks corporate. And when he left that job to come work with me, it was like, oh my gosh, now this really has to happen or else we're not going to eat and pay our mortgage.
Wow.
And that's motivating for me. I'm lucky that way. I'm just built that way. But looking back, it was probably the scariest day of my entire life. Followed quickly by the day I had to, you know, pivot my company for the pandemic and talk to my staff about what that's going to look like from now on.
Right. So where do you get your courage?
You know, in the articles we were reading about courage and the types that you mentioned, I really like disciplined courage. That's the one that really resonates with me because I happen to believe that the most important part of leadership is self-governance. And being a leader outwardly as well as inwardly and not backing down from the hard conversations, the hard decisions, and really showing up for the people you're leading and the people that need to believe in you.
Yeah.
And so I think that's, I don't want to tell you too much behind the scenes here, but we call it showtime in my company, my agency. Okay. And really, I think that's what motivates me. Every morning I wake up and I have to be good at my job. And that means, you know, showtime. That means I have to be there for those who depend on me, whether that's my employees or my clients.
Sure.
And every day I remind myself, you know, it's go time. And wow. And that keeps me going.
But where did that courage come from? Is there somebody in your past, somebody you worked for that displayed that type of leadership?
I mean, I think in some ways it comes from my TV background. Right. I mean, certainly the people you see on the news every night have things going on in their personal lives that are sad or stressful or upsetting, just like we all do. But when that camera comes on, you have a job and informing the public and making sure people have the information they need, I think is really important. And nothing can get in the way of that role. Right. And so you learn that very quickly that, you know, whatever's going on outside of work is outside of work. And this is the time when you perform. Yeah. And in that particular role, there's a performance every day. But I think that's where I learned that I can compartmentalize those two things. You know, the me having a mental breakdown in my personal life is fine. That's allowed. But that can't affect the way I show up for those who need me right now. I think also I have a dad who is an entrepreneur. He's a lawyer and built a large law firm. They just celebrated 51 years. Wow. This firm. My dad still goes to work every day. He's in his upper 70s. And he's a really hard worker. And I think he taught me that, like, I don't believe that work and life are separate, right? Like work-life balance, I think is kind of BS, but, work is part of life. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to show up, you have to show up for all of it, right? Absolutely. Work's not something you just do on the side and then you get to go live your life. And so just bringing your whole self and being 100% in and 100% committed at all times, I think I really saw that in him. And that's the kind of leader I wanted to be as well. Nice. And, you know, he has a big staff and people will, my maiden name in Atlanta, you know, he's still in Atlanta and people will know about me by my maiden name and they'll say, oh my God, I know your dad. And really? He taught me so much about what working hard really means and being there for your team. And that doesn't mean he was always perfect or they liked him, right? Sometimes he was a jerk about it. But I think that work ethic really rubbed off and it's important to me.
Awesome. Now, how do you pass that on to your team?
Well, we actually teach an in-house leadership program where I select four staff people every quarter to work with me directly. And it's a 12-week program where we talk about these elements of leadership. You know, courage is one, but decision-making, you know, prioritization, how to manage and delegate. We really, people that aren't managers in the company still learn these skills because I believe leadership's important at every level. Mm-hmm. And we really actively cultivate it. And then I'd like to think that I lead by example and that they see me espouse those qualities. You'd have to ask them, but I'd like to think that, you know, I show up where I say.
Sure. Well, that was actually my next question. If I was to run into one of your employees and ask them what type of leader you are, what would they say?
Well, no one's ever accused me of having low standards. I think they'd say I was fairly exacting, that I demand a lot. I do have high standards. We adhere to a standard of excellence. And at KWSM, we say we're all A players. And people who aren't A players self-select out fairly quickly, right? Those people don't tend to stay with the company. But I also think they would tell you that I don't ask for anything that I wouldn't give and that I am 100% in, you know, in the trenches with them when I need to, leading the charge when I need to, and that I don't ask them to be better or work harder than I would. Hmm. And so we're a close-knit group, we're a family, and we ask a lot of each other, but we care a lot about each other too. And I think that's really important.
That's nice. How many employees do you have?
About 40.
40. Wow.
Yeah.
And what's the average tenure? How long have they been with you?
Oh, well, just this month, we have 3 5-year workiversaries.
Nice.
So the company is almost 11 years old, about 11 years old. And we have several people in the 5 and 6 year range. It's a little misleading, though, if we average it, because I also have a lot of people in the year or less range because
well,
we're
hiring. Growing. Sure.
Yeah, we're hiring one employee every month right now. So,
wow.
Yeah.
And are they all remote or are they there in the office?
Well, they're remote currently because of the pandemic, but we have 4 brick and mortar offices during normal times. And we will go back to that as soon as we're allowed to.
As soon as they'll let you do it.
Yes.
That is awesome. Yeah. Okay. So we talked about your strength as a leader. What might be one of your weaknesses?
You know, one of the things I've had to learn as a leader is working on my emotional intelligence. Mm. You know, when you're an individual contributor, which I was as a journalist, I focused on myself and how to be good and what motivated me and really doing my best work. When you become a CEO or a leader of a company, there's just a shift in that. It's not enough to be really good at your job anymore. You now have to know how to help other people be really good at their jobs. Mm-hmm. And I think I have a fairly, you know, direct, aggressive personality. I've embraced it, right? I'm used to it by now.
Sure.
But I think sometimes people who are as driven as I tend to be forget that not everybody feels that way. And we're all motivated by different things. We feel differently about different things. And that's something that I continuously work on to really understand and be empathetic to where my staff is and clients as well, but where the other people in my life are. And it may not be the same place I am, and that's okay. Sure. Not everybody has to be the same.
But that's a great example of that intellectual courage, that there's always more to learn. There's always ways to improve, right? We can't know everything. There's always information out there. So helping them by being more empathetic, right, to understand what they're going through and things like that. What traits or characteristics do you think are important for a great leader?
Well, I think empathy is one of them, especially when we're in crisis times like we have been in the past year. I think that's important. I think vision is important, understanding how to set the vision and communicate it to people. So I think communication is really important, probably the most important part of being a leader.
Yes.
Is how do you help people understand where we're headed and how they contribute and why that's important? And then self-governance, I'll say it again, that I think is the most important part of being a leader, because, you know, if something during my day doesn't go the way I want it to, and I get my feelings hurt or I pout about it, or I can't control my emotions and my actions, that doesn't just reflect badly or hurt me. It reflects badly on the company, and it can hurt my staff as well. And it certainly can hurt our clients. So just that self-governance and that discipline and keeping yourself on task and not feeling things, but understanding how to feel them appropriately and use that as action to improve things.
Exactly. Because the employees are looking at you, right? When something happens, they're looking to see, is this something I should panic over? Is this something that, you know, we'll get through? So aside from the pandemic, have you had any major changes that have hit you that you guys have had to wear or work through?
You know, I think we're lucky that the major change we face consistently is our growth. We've been really, really lucky to grow year over year, and sometimes aggressively. And it's hard because you become a different company every time you hit those inflection points. Sure. And we've faced them fairly quickly. In 2018, we grew 70%. Wow. And then about 50% in 2019 and about 35% last year during the pandemic. So the numbers go down because as you get bigger, it's harder to grow that much, right? Sure. But we really do, we call it pouncing. Okay. We're like tigers, so we crouch and we get ready and then we pounce. And I think as you pounce and you attain that next level, and it means bringing on team, staff, bringing on different service offerings maybe, or offering them in a different way, I think you have to reinvent things to a certain extent. And you have to constantly be assessing and reinventing and re-communicating and rolling out new initiatives all the time. So that to me has been the hardest part of this journey, is the growth is wonderful, but how do you adjust for it and ensure that you're always on track? And I've had to put a lot of systems in place to make sure that I can be the leader I need to be during that time.
Absolutely. But it also makes me think of culture. What is your company culture?
It's funny. We have a morning huddle every morning. And yesterday morning, we were talking about companies that think of themselves as a sports team, mm-hmm. meaning, you know, high performance, less care about the people, and companies that think of themselves as a family. And that means caring a lot about the people. The performance is a little bit secondary. And I said, which one are we? And we had a discussion, and the overwhelming response is, we're both. We have to be both. And so I think our culture is really about competitiveness, high performance, A players, but also really caring and taking care of each other, because, you know, we create those integrated strategies, which means people from all those different specialties have to work together. There's no way to do our job without a lot of collaboration, a lot of teamwork. And that really means liking each other and knowing each other and caring for each other. Yeah. So we do things like personality test our employees before we hire them to make sure we know how they're going to fit in the team. And then we do a lot of coaching about understanding each other's personality types. And nice. I think that's as important as, can you do the job? Do you have the skills? I always say I can teach you to be a digital marketer, but I can't teach you to be a nice person.
Exactly.
And so we hire for the people and we teach them the skills.
That's awesome. But growing so fast, a lot of times you'll see the culture kind of change a little bit, right? Because the culture is kind of the amalgamation of all the people that you have in there, their work ethic, their beliefs, how they communicate and things like that. Growing, how do you ensure that you keep that culture that you're trying to grow?
I think you have to get a lot better at understanding who fits the culture and who doesn't, and choosing very carefully. So as we've grown, our hiring process has gotten a lot more meticulous. It's gotten a lot harder to pass a candidate through. Mm-hmm. And that's because when you get larger, one bad apple can really make a big difference. It can throw a lot of things off. Yep. Whereas, you know, if you're a team of two or three and one of them's bad, fine, we'll replace that person. But if one person sours 50 other people, now you've got a huge problem.
Sure.
And so it's choosing carefully. And it's also, I think, reinforcing the culture over and over again. I heard a speaker once that said, a culture is defined by the phrase, we don't do that here. Mm-hmm. That's not the way we do things here. And I think those are the proudest moments when I see somebody who probably isn't fitting the culture very well, and it becomes very obvious to them and the rest of the team very quickly. And like I said, they will self-select out. I had an employee come to me a few months ago who'd been on the team 3 or 4 weeks, was very good at the work, was doing a nice job, A player. But he came to me and he said, I don't think I fit in here. And I said, tell me more about that. And he did. And I said, I think you're right. What would you like to do about it? And he said, I'd like to look for another job. And I gave him 2 weeks to do that. So wow. He stayed employed, continued to do his job, but it doesn't do me any good to keep somebody who has identified that they're not a fit, because that's how the culture goes off the rails.
True.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Yeah. And for them to feel comfortable enough to come up and say, you know, I don't think I belong here. Because so many times you see businesses, they make a hire, they realize it's a bad hire, and it's like, you know, I can't admit that I did it wrong again. I can't admit that I'm wasting money. So we'll just put this person over in the corner and leave them. And that's bad. People see it and it hurts.
They do. And the thing I've learned about A players, Harlan, is they want to work with other A players. Yeah. And so allowing mediocrity or somebody who's not on the same wavelength, that does more harm than good.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So if you could go back to yourself, would you still, maybe as you're growing up, would you still say pursue journalism?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I wouldn't trade those experiences for the world. And I think it makes me a better business owner, especially in the field I'm in, because I'm curious. You know, I'm interested in the stories people have. And I mean, you know, the nuts and bolts is, as a reporter, it was my job to get people to talk about things they didn't want to talk about. And that's helpful in business a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah. And would you still recommend going out on your own, start your own agency?
Yes, I think so. I don't know. We talk about courage. I don't know, knowing everything I know now, 11 years later, I don't know that I would have had the same courage to do it. I would have been a lot more scared and a lot more hesitant. But you know what? We got here and we got through it, and I haven't screwed it up yet, at least not irrevocably. So, yeah, I think I'd still tell myself to do it, but I'd like to go in with my eyes a little more open next time.
That's awesome. So you're expanding into, the Boston area. What else, what else for Katie Wagner? What else for KWSM?
Well, we say world domination, which means we continue to, expand our offices as we can. And the purpose of that is just to be able to serve more businesses in more areas, right? Our clients are all over the country, so we like to be closer to them. And I think really my job now, as we get to the size we are and the longevity that we've had, is to bring leaders up under me and understand who the next leaders of the company are and who is going to run things. I mean, if I got hit by a bus tomorrow, the last thing I'd want is for the company to be over.
Sure.
So we need to be in a place where it's not about me. It doesn't depend on me, and everybody knows their role and can support each other and carry on. And I think that's where a lot of my focus is now.
That's awesome. Yeah, that takes a level of courage too, because you've built a company. You want to see it be successful. It's always a little scary turning over to someone else, you know?
Yeah, it is. But, you know, I'm an accidental CEO, right? I'd never even managed anybody before I started this company. And I understand that I'm probably not the right CEO forever. You know, it doesn't mean I won't be at the company or have a role, but at some point, someone will do it better than me. And I think I have to be open to that, you know, if I care about my staff and the longevity of our clients and our agency.
So if you had somebody in there running it for you right now, what would you focus your time on? What would you do?
The visionary stuff, the big picture, strategic, you know, where do we go next? How do we keep serving clients better? How do we serve more clients? That's my strength. The execution I enjoy, I like, but I think there are people that could do that as well or better than I can. So.
And world domination. When are you going to jump over to Europe? Are you going to take over Europe?
You know, we'll discuss it maybe next year. I'm going to get through the pandemic first and then maybe rest just a few months.
A couple months. All right. And then we'll come back and talk about it. Awesome. Yeah. Katie, this has been phenomenal. Where can people get in touch with you? How can they get out to your website?
Yeah, our website is kwsmdigital.com. There's a lot of tabs to explore there. If you want to check out our workshops or send me an email through the contact form there, I will get it. And, you know, of course, we're on social media. We'd love to connect on LinkedIn or Facebook, any of those channels.
That is awesome. And are there more dogs in your future?
Yes, I hope so. We are in the process of buying a house with a bigger yard, and I think that's carte blanche.
There you go. You can't have a yard without dogs, right?
That's right.
That is awesome. All right, Katie Wagner, this has been phenomenal. Thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest on my show, and we will definitely check in with you next year after your company has pounced again and grown, and we'll see where things are. All right, but the best of luck to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. If you did, please share it with your family, friends, colleagues, and stay tuned because there's a lot more coming. Coach Harlan saying so long for now.